Today on Vulnerable, I get to chat with the amazing actress, writer, and digital content producer, proud nerd Natalia Ramos. You may remember her from Nickelodeon's House of Anubis and the feature film Bratz. She is a new mama and is making informative content that covers important, present, and historical events in her series Smart is Sexy and *WTF. So in our interview, we just get to catch up. We haven't seen each other since pre-pandemic, and we talk about just her love of political science and facts put in a historical context. We talk about AI. We talk about two-party systems. So I don't know, get your calculator, your pocket divider, and your nerdy glasses, because we have a lot of fun nerding out together. Hope you enjoy this episode.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
I'm beyond excited.
Good.
Always.
Good. I'm trying to think about the last time that I saw you.
We were making bratwurst.
Holy shit, that's right.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I remember how funny that was too, because it was the pun on Bratz.
Yeah, I thought that was very clever of you.
I guess. Was it me or my team? I think we
oh, actually. Someone, we, I'd take you know the what? Credit.
It might have been me. It actually might have been me, because I was very instrumental in trying to help people, because we were scratching our heads all the time with this YouTube cooking show I was doing. Because we were just like, what do we do to make it original, to tie into the guest and honor the guest? Mm. And bratwurst did happen.
And it was also thankfully something very easy to make.
Yeah,
because I've seen you've done really challenging.
Oh Jesus!
Recipes as
I
well.
Guess I have, huh?
Yes. And I was like, I can make bratwurst.
But the cool thing was that we've actually been friends and friendly. I feel like. And our friend Andrea. Shout out to Andrea Chung. She's a legend and a producer, really, and I like her very, very much.
Yeah.
But she kind of reintroduced us. But weirdly enough, we have a lot in common. Because you did Bratz with the folks that produced and created Even Stevens.
Yeah, and Sean.
Yeah. So he was very much like instrumental in my childhood. And I thought he was a really pretty decent guy. What did you have a good experience with him too?
Oh my gosh, the best.
Okay.
It was
genius.
I was about to say that. I was about to ask you if he said genius.
Always. I was like, that's like. He wanted people to have that. It was his
catchphrase.
Yeah.
So you knew that you did a good job. You knew that was a take. Like genius. Moving on. No, we had so much fun. Bratz was such. I mean, we can get into everything, but it was a joy.
Yeah.
It really was.
Well, I think it's like it was really interesting to see this guy Sean McNamara. So basically, Sean is also my. Did he go to Pepperdine? I think he did, or his wife at the time was like a professor there.
Really?
But he was Catholic, and at the time I was looking to take sacraments or something, right? And so I didn't know a lot of Catholic people, especially in LA, and I was like, okay, would you be my what do they call it? Not a godfather, but it was like a sponsor essentially or something. Mm-hmm. It was like a godfather.
Okay.
And I asked him to do that. Okay. And he actually, so we had this whole experience where we showed up to the church, and I'll never forget. It was like so different from like the grind of the daily, you know, relationship that we had. And not that I knew him that well personally, but I just felt like we shared something really special. And I just think he was a really good guy, you know? I mean,
yeah.
He was definitely trying to make a safe environment for the kids that, you know, were around him. And I feel like you hear so many other stories from people that those environments were not that great, or that the people from the top down were not really trying to help. So, but Sean was not like that. And David, his partner too, were really great.
I always felt really safe and protected when I was filming Bratz. And I feel like Sean really was a really big part of that, because the director controls so much of the environment on the set. You can really feel the energy on set, and the director as the leader has a lot to do with that. So if they're anxious or rushing, or you know, like you can tell if they're running behind schedule and they like push you along, you feel that. And being a child, when you are one of the only, if not the only person on the set that has different rules, like you have to be in school. And you have to wrap by a certain time, or your parents have to be there. Like, that's embarrassing enough. And that was always like
the parent.
Yeah, it's embarrassing for being a child. Like so embarrassing.
No, but when you're a kid, I know. You know, you're like, oh my God, mom, shut up, leave. You know,
I know.
Logan and I, of the four brats, Logan and I were the only ones who were underage. Mm-hmm. And so Janelle and Skylar got to like work longer hours and they got to do all these cool things or like hang out. And then Logan and I had to go to school. And I say all of that because Sean never ever made us feel like we were a burden because we had to do these like extracurricular things.
Yeah.
You know, it was always like, oh no, we got to wrap because Logan and Nat got to go to school.
100%.
Like, it was like without question.
It was ingrained in him from working with us, I think.
Really?
Because I think he knew how important that was. I mean, I also think that Sean was very much a feminist when it came to, you know, having my voice be heard in my character and like making sure that I felt empowered. I remember there was this one time that there was a shot that was supposed to start on my butt. And it was supposed to pull back. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Sean, like, I can't do this. Like, I was definitely like upset about it. And immediately he was like, yeah, no, okay, you're right. It's like, we're moving on. Cause he still wanted to move on, but like he didn't dwell. And I felt like he wasn't a Hollywood person. I think he was still a really good person. So I'm so glad that you feel that way. And I think, you know, it's good to honor him. Maybe we should send this to him.
I was going
to
say, I should reach out. It's been so long. I should reach out to him.
I know. Actually, there's an Even Stevens reunion literally happening this weekend, and I'm nervous.
What do you, where? Like, what do you mean?
So, like, we do these Even Stevens reunions, like, I would say, like, every, God, I don't know, like 8 to 10 years or something like that. So there's been like two or three. One of them I couldn't make, but this one I'm making and I'm in town for. And
oh no, that'll be so exciting.
Yeah, I mean, the crew is great. They've always showed up and I feel like they've seen us grow so significantly. Whereas a lot of them, they're getting older, but like they're still tradesmen. They're still doing what they do. And it is really nice to touch base because it's kind of like a family reunion.
I mean, how many years did you shoot?
Oh, it was literally 65 episodes, but it's just weird how that stuff just bonds people together.
It's because it's a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it's 3 years, but it's like every day, long hours, right?
I always say that you know, a set, it's the most surreal kind of environment because especially when you do movies, because they're much shorter than TV, and like you go and you live and breathe. An on-location movie is the most intense. You live and breathe with these people every single day. You're like in this isolated bubble and they become your family so fast and you rely on them for so much. And then you kind of go your separate ways and like move on. It's like so bizarre.
Are you still in touch with the girls from Bratz?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
We're really good friends. They're like my ride or dies, really. What I feel really grateful about is that we have been so supportive of each other. I mean, everyone's kind of doing their own thing. And like when we celebrate each other's successes and we're there when the others are down. And they've just like true, true friends. And I'm just so grateful for them.
That's really beautiful.
Yeah. I've been really, really
Bratz
lucky.
For life.
Seriously though, I've been really lucky to have them like through, I mean, for it's now, I don't know, 15 years or something.
That's amazing.
It's a long time.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my God, you guys need to do something together again then.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Oh my God.
I mean, are you acting anymore? Like what's happening?
Oh, well, what am I doing? Where do I even start? I had a baby. I guess that's like the most important.
Whatever, you need to bounce back and be on set like right away.
Right, exactly. Like go straight back to work.
The pressure is so real.
We've talked about this, but I think some people watch you like might know, but I like studied political science in college. I got super into politics. Well, I just really, really liked it. And I'm like I don't know if a badass is the right word, maybe just a total nerd. But I got really, really into it. And I started working at this institute. It's called the Berggruen Institutes here in LA. And I kind of had like one foot in, one foot out for years. And then it's been the last couple of years that I've just really thrown myself like fully into my work there and just haven't really looked back, to be honest. I carved a little niche for myself in the institute and So my partner, Alex, and I, we started Studio B, which is like the video department of the Institute.
I love the name.
Thank you. I thought it was pretty. We were thinking like Studio 54, yeah. Like make it really cool. and you know, we're coming into our role as producers now. And I find that I feel like I finally found my place.
Yeah.
Because it's this perfect blend of politics and film. I never imagined being behind the camera, but I'm loving it and I'm learning a lot. And I have to say, actually, you played a part in this. You believe it or not.
Stop.
Yes.
I'm
yes.
so excited. I needed this.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
No, I needed this. Thank you.
You don't know this, but you did play a big part in this kind of evolution of my career, because I remember a few years ago when I went to your house to film, we were just talking about the cooking show. And you and your husband, Brendan, are there. Like, this was not just me in front of my computer with my iPhone, like making content for YouTube, which is great. It's amazing that people can do that, right? But this was like a real set with like cameras and lights, and it was like a real production. And I got there and I saw, I was like, oh, wow, like, you can do this. Like, this can be done. You can create a space for yourself and do. Like, you don't have to wait for someone to give you a part. Like, you can actually be a creator and you can be a producer. And that was like one of those aha moments. So thank you for that.
Oh my God, really. I love you so much.
It really was. It was like, oh, like, wow, this is legit.
I legit want to, like, honestly, I want to like hug you so bad. I mean, if I honestly, that's wow. Holy shit. If I could have inspired you, who I respect so much, to feel that way, empowered and have your own agency. That's amazing.
Oh, no, absolutely. And seeing the way that you two work together.
Yeah.
And
well, he's a perfect counterpart. I think
he really is.
Philosophically, I think that, you know, we don't really disagree on anything. I think like we get like cute with each other sometimes, but it's all good. And like we have a really solid communication style. But I think
that's awesome.
I think working together has actually only helped it.
And that's so rare.
It is very rare.
You guys are lucky. Yeah.
And so Alex is not your partner.
Yeah, Alex is my work husband.
Yeah. Okay.
And then I have my real husband, but he is my biggest supporter, also my like creative kind of confidant. Yeah. And he is not a front of camera type person. He's much more behind the scenes.
Okay, so we gotta talk about your husband because he's awesome. I still haven't met him, which is ridiculous.
Was he didn't go?
No. We had like a ladies' lunch at Crest Station, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, his family owns. Mm-hmm. And is it Michelin rated? I don't know. The place is amazing.
Like, but it should be.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing. It's one of the best Asian seafood places.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so but you all have been together for a very, very long time, right?
Yeah.
How long?
Since high school.
Okay, so that's what I wanted to say. I was like, did he meet you when you were in Bratz?
So I moved to LA when I booked Bratz. And
from
Miami.
Right. That's right.
It was Miami. I'd been coming out. I'm trying to get the timeline right. I'd been coming out a lot, but we officially moved right when I booked Bratz. And that was in January 07. And so September, once we had finished, it was like later that year, September is when I started at Beverly Hills High. So it was like right after I finished Bratz.
It was a good high school, Beverly Hills High.
It was great.
It's a public school, but it's like
the most private public school that like you
Beverly
go
Hills
to.
High. Like it's 90210. Yeah.
The movie. I remember when I first came to LA when I like was like an aspiring actress and I made my mom drive me to the high school and I like took a photo in front of the high school. Oh. It was my dream to go there. But we went because for practical terms, it was actually the perfect place for me because they have, of course, a special program for actors. So I did independent study where I could still be a student in a real high school and like go to homecoming and football games and like go to classes there, but I didn't have to go every day. I kind of had my own teacher that I would report to and would give me, you know, it was like hybrid homeschooling.
I did not know that Beverly Hills had that service, essentially.
Yeah, yeah, it was a special service for child actors.
That's so cool. Well, I mean, I went to a performing arts school, but it was very expensive.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that was an option. I should have told my mom about that. That's so cool.
It was fairly new when I started. I don't know where the program is now.
Now?
Over the years that I was there, it evolved into like professional athletes.
Yeah.
And like any type of
that's like
working,
where I went to college.
Yeah.
I think it's the way I see it, and if you define it as high performing children. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they're at high levels of performance. Mm-hmm. And that requires a split focus on your academics.
Yes.
Because you're so focused on putting your energy and your time into something else. So mm-hmm. then I'm curious though, yeah. okay, so you fell in love with political science, mm-hmm. but at what point, you're fine, I'm like itching my, what point did you like realize that you gave a shit about the world outside of Hollywood?
Yeah, it's funny because it was a really gradual thing and it's not like there was this moment, right? But there were so many signs along the way. I remember, I look back at my time shooting House of Anubis and I was, you know, in between takes sitting reading, you know, the Communist Manifesto and On China by Kissinger, all these really like dense
by
books.
Yourself?
Yeah, just like sitting just by myself.
Because you wanted to.
Like in between takes. Yeah, because I just wanted to. Oh yeah.
God, and then so I was cool.
I was doing it wasn't even to be cool. I was just really
it wasn't performative.
It was like an escape. Yeah. It was just and I didn't have anyone to talk to about it either. Mm-hmm. I would read something super cool, like, oh my God. Like this is what happened during Mao and Nixon's meeting. In what and nobody cared. Like I didn't have anyone to talk to. It was kind of sad, actually. Sad. I would call Derek and be like, "Can I tell you something?"
Your
yeah,
husband.
My husband now. Yeah.
So Derek, like, is he? Mm-hmm. He's seen so many iterations of you.
Yeah, a lot.
So you've grown from like just this beautiful, amazing actress to then, eventually, I mean, you've been producing, and then you're his wife, and now you're his baby mama.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we've grown so much. Now I say we just happen to grow together and not apart. Mm-hmm. But we've influenced and inspired one another so much, and he's you know, my number one fan. Like go do this, and why do you think you can't do that? And how comes up with these like creative angles of whenever I say something can't be done, he's like, no, it can. And we really push each other to be better in that way. So yeah. He's like kind of the perfect creative partner, even right. though he is never seen or not directly involved. He is always involved, you
That's
know, with me.
How I'm I mean, like really how many lucky. People do you know that are like high school sweethearts that have that healthy? I know one yeah. other high school sweetheart couple.
Yeah.
That is like that. They are absolutely in love and they're ride or dies yeah. for each other. But at the same time, like they're very much doing their own. Like I don't feel mm-hmm. like they're not. I mean, I wouldn't say they're not ambitious. They're actually doing really, really well. Mm-hmm. But I think like you guys are killing it. You were just telling me Derek's like a hemp farmer now.
Yeah, he started a hemp CBD business.
Is that okay? Can we talk
yeah.
about it? Is it legal?
Yeah, no, it's totally legal. It's hemp. They manufacture hemp and CBD products. They were farming in Nevada for a few years, and now they have this huge factory. And I can't even articulate probably what exactly he does every day, but it's in the factory, and they're making like, you know, gels and all the things you see on the shelves, all the CBD products.
Love CBD products.
Oh my God, it's amazing. I have scoliosis, and yeah. it's really, really saved me.
Oh my God, scoliosis. Yeah. I remember growing up, we had to get tested for scoliosis all the
yeah.
time.
Yeah, in school, and somehow they missed it with me.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't catch it until I was filming House of Anubis, actually. And, one day I just couldn't go to set. I just couldn't move. I remember it was so bad.
Had you been doing something extreme with your body on set?
I can't remember now. Maybe we did a lot of like stunts.
Because it was like a magical show, right?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. It was a mystery and we were like climbing through tunnels and stuff. Yeah. So I probably did something. But yeah, anyway, I'm a big fan of CBD.
Yeah.
So the
my God, though, but how did you deal with scoliosis if you didn't have CBD then?
A lot of ibuprofen. A lot. Yeah.
And that's not good for your gut, right?
No, it's not good.
So, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So,
my husband has had a lot of stomach problems from having to take, you know, a bunch of different medicines and stuff. Like, in general, he struggles a lot.
Really?
And I remember too when my dad was sort of dealing with cancer, he was taking ibuprofen. And it's one of those things where it's like, it's really hard on your body. So, yeah. if you can like find CBD,
yeah.
People assume that CBD is. Like drugs.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, yeah, it's just a natural kind of pain remedy. It's a natural healer and it helps with inflammation too, which is a big problem in today's world.
Mm-hmm.
So many different, you know, ailments mm-hmm. that we take a, you know, prescription or even a non-prescription pill off the counter.
Right.
Without even a second thought.
Right.
But then you hear like CBD and people are like, oh, wait, is it safe? Is it okay?
Yeah, we're so prude.
But the world is changing. It's evolving for sure. Yeah. I think personally, I think mushrooms are going to be the next,
I buy that.
Because the next big thing. I think okay. CBD people are now so
I think
like,
microdosing open to is it. Big, right?
Yeah, in okay. certain circles. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to become more mainstream. But anyway, what do I know? This is not my area. You should talk to Derek.
I know, right?
We'll send you some CBD, though.
Oh, please
I'll
do.
Tell him, yeah.
Oh,
especially
my God.
I would love that.
I've tried different. Next Evo has been the sponsor. They sent me stuff. And then Equilibrium sent me stuff for a while. And I loved mm-hmm. their stuff. There's a lot of really great things on the market to take.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sober. So I was very confused about it at first. And they actually had somebody, like a specialist, get on the phone and was like, look, this is not psychotropic. It's not addictive. This is literally just like helping your synapses relax so that you don't mm-hmm. feel like you're in fight or flight.
Yeah.
So that's how it helps with the anxiety. So
yeah, that's kind of like, I mean, that's amazing that it was able to help.
Yeah, so many people.
So many
But then people. Like with the mushrooms, yeah. like you were just talking about, I do think you're right. I've been hearing more things about them.
I think, you know, especially here I'm talking like I'm an expert. This is just my personal
opinion.
We're just
talking,
man. We're just talking. Yeah, I'm now so like because I guess I'm in this politics world. It's like everything needs to be like
yeah.
But
well,
no,
we don't
have to
talk about it.
Yeah, no. But I really do think that especially with the opioid crisis that we've seen, which has been such a horrific tragedy in this country, there's less automatic trust of like. Institutions we're seeing not just in the pharmaceutical industry but like just like politically like around the spectrum mm-hmm. People trust like institutions less and less
but
I think you're going to see just people questioning more like the information that they're being given and just like assuming that just because like this is a prescription or it's like FDA approved or whatever that you know, this is what's good for me. Mm-hmm. That this now has good consequences and bad consequences. We're mm-hmm. seeing that with, you know, vaccines mm-hmm. and with like just all types of questioning authority. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a big part of the culture today, mm-hmm. For better and for worse. But
well, when you think about, okay, so let's get political.
Oh, like, gosh.
No, but nothing yeah. crazy. Yeah. Like, I don't get a chance to talk about this stuff too, but I actually was studying political science with an emphasis in human rights. I was totally wanting to be Angelina Jolie. I mm-hmm. wanted to go to CEPA at Columbia, where I was going at the time. And I went and interned in Washington, D.C. for my godfather, who was the senator of Connecticut, Senator Chris Dodd. Uh-huh. I was supposed to be named after him. And like,
oh,
actually,
my gosh. Wait, I didn't know all of these. Like Dodd from Dodd-Frank?
Chris. Like, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
No way.
Chris Dodd, yeah. I was supposed to be Christopher.
Oh my gosh.
My dad went to law school with Chris Dodd.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, but you're Chris. I mean,
and
wow,
I'm Christy.
That's crazy.
And he's been a very supportive person. I haven't talked to him a lot in my life, but there's been times when I've come to him and he's been a good godfather.
Yeah.
You know, like for somebody great. He didn't, you know, didn't really know, he came to my father's funeral a few years back and he was very sweet and present in that moment.
Wow.
And he was very sad that my dad had passed, even though they didn't talk pretty consistently. Mm-hmm. But it is really strange to me that like I love seeing this for you and I wanted to get you here on Vulnerable so that like I could see the path I did not take.
Yeah.
But it's so wild. It's like what is it like being an actress one day and now you're like this political like, you know, content creator essentially.
Yeah, it's in a way it's strange. How do I answer that question? It's like strange, but then it also feels like it was just a natural evolution.
Sure.
I think I first So I wonder if you can relate to this, Christy. One of the hard parts of having success so young is that you, in a way, take it for granted or you don't question like this path that you're on. I always just assumed that I was going to be an actress mm-hmm. and I would never do anything else. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you had that
my experience was a little bit more like I'm in purgatory. How do I get out? But I know exactly.
That's another avenue, but that first part
of that, yes, I'm assuming that I'm never going to get out. Whereas I have agency to do something different with my life, but
for sure.
I just didn't know that. So yeah.
I never questioned it and I had always had this image of what I was going to be and what I was going to do and I never even considered any alternatives. And my mom was like, you have to go to college. And I fought her and I fought her.
Really?
Oh my God, it was such a fight.
What about Derek? Was he kind of on the same path of like, college, not college?
No, Derek was also on the college side. And I was so stubborn. I was like, well, I'm only going to apply to one school. And I applied to USC because it was in LA. And I applied to theater. I was like, Mom, if you're going to make me go to college, I'm only going to
study theater.
You're going to
spend all that money. Well, I'm going to make you do
the theater program. That was a big realization. And also because I was paying for it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's true.
So I got there and I was like, I am not going to be spending this amount of money to graduate with a degree in theater. Mm-hmm. Also because I was with. It just wasn't for me. And I was with a lot of, like, I had done more you than, like, some of my teachers. Classes.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, I was, like, and I was taking acting classes outside of school. Like, why, you know, it just didn't make sense for me. And so on my own, I changed my major. I'd always been interested in politics. And I was just like, oh, let me just study it. And it just kind of, it was just this crazy kind of life unfolding. I just became more and more obsessed with it. And I think, I found the Institute. I met the founder, Nicholas, at a party of all things.
Yeah.
Some Hollywood party.
Oh, wow. You know,
of all Irony. Places. Yeah. And started reading about what he was working on. And then I like came in as an intern and I just really slowly started working my way through the Institute, as the Institute was also finding its path, and it was new at the time, a new place to be, mm-hmm. and they were just kind of getting started, and so it was like really excited to be there on that journey. Exciting. So to
is the Institute like a think tank, or is it more or less like is there a mission statement for this Institute?
Yeah, we would be in the category of think tank, but we don't like to use
I've heard
word.
Think tanks are actually like money laundering.
Oh, really? Yeah. I mean, there's like nonprofits and philanthropies and foundations and whatever that right. like there's bad sides to everything.
Right. Everything.
But we're a research institute that's very forward thinking. And so we look at what we call the great transformations of our time, which are these like long-term issues that politicians can't address because they're so focused on the like election cycles or something that has like instant gratification for, you know, their constituents. Mm-hmm. But things that are really changing our world, like how are artificial intelligence and gene editing going to like change our existence as humans? How can we renovate democracy at a time when authoritarian regimes are on the rise globally? How can we design new economic systems that can replace the current like capitalist models that are failing us?
Wow.
Like really big
questions. So I was gonna say
questions.
Really like easy yeah. questions with
exactly.
just one answer, really.
Right. And there's and that's exactly the point. There's no like straight line or straight answer. It's really just about congregating some of the greatest minds across like a variety of disciplines and most importantly for us, cultures. So we speak to people, you know, that range from politicians to philosophers and artists and technologists, American, Chinese, Mexican, like literally from around the world. And it's much harder, but you get this like global perspective and really try to work to find solutions. And it's really, really hard. But it's also so invigorating.
Okay.
So
I would imagine so.
Yeah. It's like it's
like
just like
scratching
wild.
The itch of curiosity.
Absolutely. And just yeah. to be in these rooms and listen to these people that I really admire speak and be kind of on the inside of that and then learning so much. It was really hard to then like go home and like learn lines for an audition for like a guest star on a sitcom that like I really
nudity required
really to do like exactly anything right
yeah.
It was just like I just really it was just hard to mentally make that shift
yeah
and then
you're like I'm too good for this shit.
No, it was more if I was getting amazing roles like
yeah.
then maybe it would be different but the things that were that like that were, you know, coming my way, they just like didn't excite me really.
Yeah.
And I think there were many signs along the way, but the moment when you get an audition and rather than being like, yes, like I have not, like, am I allowed to curse? Like,
yeah.
Like, fuck yeah. Like
yeah.
I have an audition, like this is my job.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of having that attitude, I was like, oh, like, really like, I have this big thing tomorrow that I don't want to miss and it's going to screw up my whole schedule. That's when it was like, oh, maybe this isn't right for me. But then I had to find, like, what do I do with that now? Yeah.
You like have all this knowledge of a career and life path that you had had since like 14.
It was, but even before that, because, you know, it takes so long to get to that place.
Yeah, in Miami, right?
In Miami, and then always, I mean, my parents were both there in the music industry. I kind of grew up with a very, very realistic understanding of the industry, which I'm really grateful for. And just always like this presumption that I was going to be a part of it. But now it's really cool to be involved in some way. But, you know, like producing, I think, is really where that's where my focus is right now. And then being able to merge like politics with film and storytelling.
Interesting.
That's kind of where my focus is now. And it's been really, really exciting.
So what have your recent videos been then? I know there's Smarter is Sexy and the WTF series that you have.
Yeah. So it all started with those, actually, because I've always been the friend that, you know, people call up and they're like, can you explain this to me? Like, what's going on?
And I do that to my husband.
Really?
He had a political science degree.
I know. Yeah, we talked about that, too. Like, we're just a bunch. Let's just, like, all just quit our jobs.
I know, right? Like, and just, yeah.
Just, like, start our own political think tank. What was I even saying?
The videos. Sexy. Yeah.
So it started honestly just for fun. But I realized I'm actually really good at taking complicated topics and concepts and breaking them down and explaining them in a way that is easy to understand, not condescending. Like, you're not dumb because you don't know this. Like, why should you know this? No one's talking about this. And putting it in historical context. Like, how did we get here? Or history is just so damn cool. Like, you should know this. Like, it excites me. And so I just want to talk about it. So I had so much fun doing WTF is happening videos. And then Smart is Sexy started when I had all these opportunities to interview people. And I really just wanted to make, like, being smart an asset. Like, it's not just, like, whether you're, you know, how beautiful you are, if you wear the best clothes, or like what is sexy, whatever, like your mind, like having knowledge and being empowered in that sense, like that was kind of became like a whole mission for me. So I started interviewing like really amazing, mostly women, who are doing like the coolest things and really have something to teach us. And so I just wanted to kind of brand it in that way. But all of that led to what I'm doing at the Institute now, which is taking these really, really complex topics and kind of breaking them down and trying to articulate them to a larger audience beyond just the people within our network that we already reach. It's about, like, if we are in the business of ideas, we need to tell stories. Stories are the best way to express an idea.
I have a question about a large concept.
Okay. Okay, let's go. Try me.
two-party systems.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Okay.
Okay. I think, again, all opinions, but our two-party system is broken right now. All you get are the extremes on either side that are just fighting for a narrow section of their constituency who are like the most extreme, and they're appealing to those people. Then you have all of these people in the middle, and a lot of people in this country feel like they kind of have to pick between two evils, and they become disengaged, helpless, disconnected. I don't know what a better model is. I would say maybe the European parliamentary system, but like Europe is not like an amazing model right now either. So like in terms of the solution for the structural solution, that's not my forte. But I do think that an interesting proposal to resolve like the political polarization is universal voting or mandatory voting. Mm-hmm. We have it in Australia. I say we because I'm part Australian. But it's mandatory to vote. And by bringing everybody into the electorate, you actually bring in all of these people in the middle who feel like disengaged and like helpless, and you actually have like a much more moderate system with like less tension, and it calms things down. And people, these politicians are no longer pandering to the extremes. They have to pander to everyone.
Aha.
So it's an interesting proposition that I think could actually have a real impact.
Interesting. Okay. Next topic.
Okay.
AI in cinema that you just had a lecture on.
Yeah. So I just went to this amazing talk by this, like one of the lead AI scientists at Google.
What's his name?
His name is Blaise Agueras de Arcas.
Okay. That's a beautiful name.
He's, yeah, really, really.
Blaise Agueras Sacas?
Agueras y Arcas.
Oh my God.
I might be saying it wrong. I'm saying it with like this like Latin Spanish name. I'm sure I'm like totally mispronouncing it. But I'm saying it like,
I mean, you sell it and it's gorgeous.
Watch him. It's going to be like, no, that's not.
Someone in the comment section.
Yeah, exactly. Like, please correct me. So he was in conversation actually. It was at the Hammer Museum. It was just last week. It was super cool. Public event. And he was in conversation with an author and their friends, which was also really cool. It was like kind of like this, like just two friends chatting. And they were coming from two completely opposite ends of the spectrum. You have the scientists who's saying that you do not understand how advanced artificial intelligence is becoming where we're going and how fast we're going to get there. Mm-hmm. And robots can fall in love. They have a consciousness.
Okay.
And like just all of these like really, really deep philosophical things. And then the author is like, a robot cannot write this book. He cannot put together the words, and he picks up his own book. You know, like he cannot put together the words and the prose and the spiritual, like emotive thoughts that I put on to pen and paper. Like a machine can never do that. And it was this like back and forth banter. And at the end of the day, it's like, well, the machines are learning from what we give them.
It's our data, right?
It's our data. And it's everything that we feed them. They're able to, just the same way I'm, like everyone that you have interviewed on this podcast, they're all feeding you information. You're learning something new every day. Mm-hmm. You're not gonna remember every single conversation. Things will come to you in your life like, oh yeah, like that will inspire or influence or whatever, even subconsciously from all of these amazing conversations that you've had. But now imagine you're a machine and you feed in every single conversation that like ever existed in human history.
Oh my gosh.
And they will be able to pick up, you know, the human nuance.
But
and
when we say they, we're assuming that there's like multiple, almost like personalities that have their own choice of consciousness.
Right.
So do they have their own free will, in your opinion? Or?
That's like the question, right?
Or are they is it just a matter of the data that is fed to them to be a reflection of the entirety of human like consciousness? Or
I believe that Blaise would say that eventually we will reach a point where they will have free will, where they will they be self-aware? These are all the questions that are being asked, like will they have self-awareness? Will they have free will? Self-awareness is actually a big one. Like, will they, you know, be able to identify as a self, right?
Right.
Will they have a consciousness? Will they be able to love? Will they have real emotions? Or is it just like data?
And what form will they be in? It's like, will they be in Westworld? Or it's I can't understand.
I think embodiment is another whole thing. Mm-hmm. Like, do you need to have a body in order to have, you know, or a soul, you know, in order to have an impact, to like create something, to make decisions, to build, you know, to like whatever it is that they're going to be doing. I'm absolutely not, after talking to like some of the smartest people on this topic, I feel really, really silly even like trying to verge into this realm.
I think it's really fascinating to hear you break it down personally.
Well, it is fascinating, and it's definitely, we are wholly unprepared from a societal and also a legislative perspective. You know, you just have to look at the Facebook Congress hearings to see that like most of our lawmakers do not know how to use a computer, you know? So it's actually quite scary. Mm-hmm. Because we're definitely not prepared, and we're, I think, focusing on a lot of things that are nowhere near as important to like the safety and wellness of humanity as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, AI is a tool,
mm-hmm.
and we can use it and harness it to do absolutely incredible things and work alongside humans, or we can kind of create a system where it gets out of control,
right,
and out of hand,
and like kind of like what humans are like right now. It's a reflection of
it's a reflection of us
reality.
Yeah, and I'm not talking about like Terminator, like some crazy, you know, like that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is like there was one example with fake news. If we will reach a point, and deep fakes, like we will reach a point where you won't be able to distinguish what's real and what's fake.
Oh shit.
And the amount of what is fake being out there will overwhelm what's real, and the machines will start learning from what's fake. And if we don't legislate this appropriately, or if we don't actually like use the right tools to address it, like you can get into this cycle where like there's just such an overwhelming amount of fake news,
mm-hmm.
and fake articles, mm-hmm. and fake and videos and bots, and just like that, yeah. that it's like, what is reality?
Right.
Like, though, that's like one scary.
Yeah. It seems situation. Like what we are putting out there online, or how we're interacting with technology, has to be a conscious consumption. And then also to like what we're putting out, like what the content that you're making seems incredibly conscious.
Yeah.
And responsible.
I really take it very seriously.
Yeah.
And
well, you're a mom. And I think, not to interrupt you, but like, I think that like, that's one of the things that I want to definitely focus on is like, I have issues with climate change. Like, I'm fucking terrified. Like, I had to have a baby during a quarantine, and it was living through that and having a little baby and a toddler. It's so much when you become a new mom, and then when you add anything societally onto that, and we look at the people in Ukraine or whoever, it's like we're all so privileged compared to everyone around the world.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So, but at the same time, everybody has their realities, and we're all sort of linked more so than we realize already.
Absolutely.
Which I don't know if we'll ever fully be able to admit unless it was online, because now people are like, oh, I'm so much more connected.
Yeah.
On social media, right. I feel so much more connected to everybody, which ironically is true. Like, we get to touch base with each other. I get to witness things about your life.
Yeah.
And it is like, I get it. But this, I think we're touching on something, which is that like how we're utilizing these privileges of this technology is going to have its own impact. But I guess my question is, as a parent, how do you not freak yourself out?
It's really, really scary. Okay. And I think about it more now, of course, being a mom. My boss always says that we have more data than ever, but less wisdom. And if we have the tools at our disposal, this could be the most incredible time in human history. We have the ability to never work again.
It's never been this good.
If we don't want to. Yeah. Like, we literally are at this juncture where like, we could just become our full creative selves, never ever have to work, you know, like
food,
labor for labor for money, like does not need to be part of the equation. We have enough food to feed everyone on the planet. Like we can explore other the opportunities are so vast, and never before in human history have we had opportunities like this. But at the same time, it's also never have we had this power to this much destructive power. And so it's like, you know, on an everyday basis, like with Theo, with my son, it's like, well, you know, what am I going to do when he asks me for a cell phone? Or like, you know, like, I don't know, like how you feel about social media and all these things, but every single like person in Silicon Valley and like top like leaders in technology companies, every single one of them that I've ever spoken to, they don't let their kids have social media. Like, their kids are not.
That's like all the people who I know have kids who are child actors are like, I'm not putting my kid in the business.
It's exactly that. It has been designed to be addictive, you know? And I do think that our kids' generation might be different because we didn't.
Like, we grew up.
We grew up without, like, we remember a time before it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, we had it and it was so new and, like, we weren't so sure. And then there's like the generation right below us that grew up with it and still people didn't know the dangers of it. And like so many of them are just, I mean, I feel for like, you know, I like call it like kids who are in college right now.
Yeah.
Who, like the insecurity issues and like, especially with girls mm-hmm. and also this like race to the bottom, in my opinion, mm-hmm. like, and just, there's like
well,
so many
wants
mental
to be an
health.
Influencer.
Okay.
That's like the number one, yeah. most coveted job of youth right now is to be an influencer.
Did you see that Tristan Harris interview that we were?
I must have heard of it because this is something that I've heard repeatedly.
So he founded the Center for Humane Technology and he is one of the Silicon Valley people that I was referring to that like doesn't let his kids use social media. Mm-hmm. And he's like a, like, anyway, look him up. Anyone who's listening, look him up. He has a really impressive resume. But he was talking about how TikTok in China is all the content is geared towards STEM. Mm-hmm. And here we get like viral dance videos. Mm-hmm. And they did a study, which is the one that you're just mentioning, where American kids, by and large, want to be an influencer, but kids of the same demographic in China want to be astronauts. And yeah. like, anyway. So all that was a long way of saying, like, I don't know how I'm going to respond, but I hope that like our kids' generation, it might have a different relationship with technology just because there's been enough time now to see the harms that it can do.
Sure. There's more awareness.
There's more awareness.
There's yeah. these conversations are being had.
Yeah. And so like cool. mental health is such a big topic right now.
That's the one good thing I will say that I feel like has come out of TikTok specifically yeah. is that mm-hmm. there is that sense of community, a human community actually. Mm-hmm. And so it's that yeah. humanness that I see represented in some of these videos and some of these hashtag mom talk or hashtag, you know, because like totally. as a new mom, I'm sure you can relate. It's kind of like, okay, I don't know how or mm-hmm. why, you know, my kid isn't sleeping through the night. Like,
yeah,
here's a mom that's come up on my algorithm and she's going through the same thing I am. And we get to laugh about it in this brief moment. And then there's another mom yeah. that said, try these things and try this product. And like, you try that product and then it really helps you. And so, yeah. dude, it's
a double-edged sword. And when you look back at history, and this is why I love history, because it puts things in context and it kind of makes you feel a little better too.
Okay.
But with all new technologies have come good and bad. You know, if you go back to the Gutenberg press, like the first printing press, you know, we were able to print on paper for the first time ever and like distribute books, mostly the Bible, like on a scale that was never ever before possible. That leads to yellow journalism and the first fake news, you know, like on print and like mass hysteria over like whatever false things are going on and like racism against the Chinese immigrants who came to build the railroads, like all of this stuff. And it like our like culture was profoundly changed by the ability to like print on pieces of paper.
Right.
And every single technology, even before that fire, I'm sure had its own like perils, you know. But that's always
there's
the
like
way
a but there's a whole generation yeah. of like cave kids that were like, "Mom, I just want to be a fire starter."
Yeah, exactly. But exactly, that's the human condition.
Those are gonna always
story.
Be brats. Yeah,
always.
They're doing like TikTok dances by the fire.
Yeah, exactly. Aww. It's like the current influencer. But that would be a really funny story to do. Or like we should call Yuval. Yuval Harari.
Uh-huh.
Wait,
who
Sapiens.
Is Yuval? Oh my god!
Oh my god! You have to read Sapiens. Okay. It's amazing. That should be on your reading list. Yuval Harari is amazing. He wrote like the most accessible book on anthropology. It's like a number one bestseller. Like okay. it's a big like it's not a petty intellectual thing. I swear. It's like no. It's like okay, it's like a it. No. I'm not. I'm saying no, for like anyone listening. Like I'm yeah, not yeah. an anthropologist. Like I understood it.
Anthropology is very cool.
It's sick.
I yeah. took a, I did. I took an anthropology class at Columbia. It blew my mind. Anthropology is wonderful, and I yeah. understand what you're saying about putting history into context. And mm-hmm. I think it's so wonderful to see your journey historically in that I've witnessed you, even though it's been through social media predominantly, I've seen you grow. And if we were to look at that anthropologically, like Facebook brings up like our pictures at that red carpet,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
with Andrea. And like, I remember how yeah. I feel as a human about it. And I'm just so glad that I get to connect with you still in, you know, yeah. in person.
It's always so fun.
And not in fake often. As an AI bot.
Yeah, exactly. I do think, yeah, I mean, there's something about human connection that cannot be replaced. But maybe I'm old fashioned. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
So I heard that Chet Hanks was on the set of Bratz.
Yeah.
How was that?
Well, he was actually a doll. Like I told him a crazy story. he was a boy doll. Yeah. No, he was amazing. This sounds so fake and cheesy and whatever, but I really mean it. We there was no drama on the set. We all really, really got along. I haven't seen him in a while, but I just have said I have really good memories.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I have a really funny story, actually.
Oh, please tell me.
Okay, so there were three boys, like, on the set of Bratz, really. There was Chet, Ian, and Steven. And they were like, you know, this is, like, such a girl, like, a chick flick. It's all about the Bratz. Like, we're going to do something called the Bros. Like, let's make a movie. And they had made all of these plans on their day off that they were going to get together and, like, make their own movie. Like, this is, like, a fun side project. And Chet is like, you can come to my house. And they're like, okay, sure, cool. Like, let's go, like, gives the address. And Ian, the way he tells the story, he's like, just moved out to LA. Like, he's gotten his first, like, big job, like, wants to be an actor, you know, like, living the dream. And starts, like, driving to this address to go, like, film this movie. He brings his camcorder, like a 92 camcorder or something that he's going to use to, like, film this movie. And as he's, like, driving down Sunset, like, the houses are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And he, like, pulls up, he's like, is this the right address? Like, no, like, it can't be. Is this right? Anyway, long story short, the gate opens, he comes in. It's like, hi, is Chet here? Like, oh, yeah, yeah. Goes into the living room and, like, is waiting. Oh, come into the kitchen. Turns around, and there's, like, Tom Hanks in his pajamas eating cereal. And, like, Chet hadn't told anyone that Tom Hanks is his son. Oh, and Ian is like,
he's like, Hanks.
Like, literally. No, because he went by a different name. And Bratz, his name is Chet Tyson.
Oh, because he was
he was trying to be his own person. Yeah. It's really commendable. Mm-hmm. And Tom is like, couldn't be nicer. It's like, he's literally the nicest guy in the world.
Oh, hey. How are you doing?
Hey, how's it going? What are you doing? And Ian's like, we're making a movie. It's like Tom Hanks there. And Tom's like, oh, Chet. Like, oh, and then Steven shows up. It's the three boys. And he's like, oh, Chet, like, why don't you go down the street to Susie's house and see if you can borrow some of her dad's equipment? Oh, yeah, great idea. Let's do that. Go down the street, they walk on over to Susie's house, and hey, Susie, Chet, like, rings the door. Hey, Susie, how's it going? Like, we're making a movie. Think we can borrow some of your dad's equipment? They walk into the house. It's Steven Spielberg. Next door neighbor. It's like, hey, guys, what are you doing? And at this point, Ian and Steven are like, oh, my God. We're making a movie. Like, how do you tell Steven Spielberg that you're making a movie?
Right.
You
know? Oh, no. Oh, my gosh.
He literally, he's in. There. He's there. Oh, like, Steven Spielberg is there.
This was just a day off.
And he's, like, hiding his camera. Like, we're making a movie. Like, just epic. Aww.
But, you know, this new movie came out with Steven Spielberg that seems mm-hmm. really sweet about how he was, like, this young kid and he had this huge imagination. And I haven't even seen it yet, but.
This is another angle, actually, that I'm really focusing on with my work and the connection of, like, filmmaking and politics and ideas. Like so much of what these people have created, like, in their minds have shaped how we see the world, you know, like with sci-fi and like Star Wars, like George Lucas, you know, and like the things that the E.T. with Spielberg, like our ideas of aliens, even like so much of it comes from like the images that we see. And like Hollywood is such has such a large role in shaping our culture and like our understanding of one another, whether it's, you know, like sci-fi in the future, but also like understanding one another's humanity and relating to people like in different cultures or around the world. And I just think like there's so much power in storytelling in Hollywood in particular. And it just like, makes me really like excited to be part of that.
Well, I'd rather have someone like you at the helm and with
or Steven Spielberg. It's not bad.
Sure. No, I think he's done some really great work. Yeah. But I do think that, you know, everyone's getting older. And I think that this is a new reality. And so it would be really great to have people like you have your voice amplified. Because I feel like you are responsible when it comes to this media thing.
That's really sweet. It means a lot. Part of the reason why I don't put out as much content as the algorithm would like is because it takes me a long time to write the script, because I really try to research everything. I try to be as impartial as I can. I try to stick to the facts because they still exist. And sometimes that can be really, really hard.
Yeah.
So, but it's so important. So I think it's more important to just to do one like really thoughtful, longer piece that maybe five people watch in full than when you're talking about these particular topics, like short, quick, like three reels a day, like just like quick stuff. Like it doesn't serve the purpose of what I'm trying to do.
Okay.
So like I still haven't figured out how to communicate in that way. I know that there's a way to communicate. And we were actually talking about TikTok and stuff
too.
I know that there's a way to communicate in a much shorter capacity. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know that you could probably figure it out. You'd be the best one to help me.
If I can inspire you once again, I would be more than happy.
You always do.
Let's try to make that happen.
But yeah, I do take it really seriously.
Good.
So
thank you. Thank you for existing and being you, being true to yourself, because it really is going to help the world. I know it. I know it to be true.
Oh, well, that's really sweet. I hope so. I hope we're making a better world for our kids.
Me too. All right, Mama. Well, thank you for coming. And I guess we can find the Institute online, right?
Yeah, the Berggruen Institute. Mm-hmm. Doing all kinds of cool stuff.
Okay. So they're just online? I mean, do you want donations or like?
No, not donations.
Okay.
We just the coolest thing actually to check out in terms of the work that we produce would be Noema Magazine. Noema is Noema. It's the magazine that we produce. It's digital and print. And it's like when you get tired of the daily news and those big headlines and like it's kind of exhausting, and you want like really thoughtful journalism with beautiful art and like to the types of content that you won't find anywhere else. I'm really, really proud of Noema, and I think it's like the best source of information.
Cool.
And like long-term thinking.
So oh my gosh, really I'm totally cool. Gonna take a look at that.
Yeah, Noema Magazine. That's our magazine.
Okay.
And it's
I want to support for sure. I want to get to know the Institute. Well, thank you very much. And we will not be waiting this long to see each other again.
I really hope not.
A pandemic will not come between us again.
Never again.
Knock on wood.
Yeah, exactly. For sure. Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure, as always.
Thanks so much for checking out this episode of The Vulnerable Podcast. For clips of this episode, go ahead and check out the Podco YouTube channel. Links in the description.